Welcome to the Easy Yoga Podcast with myself, Gemma Neese, Easy Yoga founder, author, yoga coach, and relationship coach. It is my pleasure to have you here and for you to feel energized, calm, happy, and for you to have the perfect relationship with yourself, your partner, and your family without seeing a family therapist, changing your personality, or leaving your job. You will learn techniques and things to help you guide you through a better life through health, meditation, yoga, journaling, nutrition, and all things yoga, for you to have the life you deserve and crave, and for you to love yourself on a soul level. Thank you so, so much for being here today, and I am so grateful and so full of love to have you here. Enjoy this next episode. Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode from Easy Yoga, all things relationships, yoga and well-being. And today I have a very special guest. His name is Yogi Aaron and he is one of the most sought after teachers today. He is trailblazing a new path in the world of yoga, known for his unorthodox perspectives on stretching and flexibility and how both cause more harm than good, which I'm very interested about. And he is the creator of the revolutionary approach to yoga, applied yoga anatomy and muscle activation, Yama. Is that how you say it?
Ayama, see? Yes.
Ayama. The online platform, The Yogi Club, host of the yoga podcast, Stop Stretching, author of Autobiography of the Naked Yogi and the forthcoming book, Stop Stretching. So welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Gemma. I really appreciate it.
That's all right. Carry on.
No, thank you for having me. But I was, just as you were reading my biography, I was just thinking that just before I came on this call, I follow this yoga teacher on Facebook and somebody had posted in their comments, like, you know, I've been doing these hip openers and now I feel debilitated and I have to go in for a hip replacement surgery. And, you know, it's just like this, just such an epidemic in the yoga world with so many people getting injured. And we can talk more about that in whatever you want, but it's because of that person and these people. Like I have two friends that have had hip replacements, knee replacements, spinal fusions in their lower back. And so I'm trying to, you know, flip the script on flexibility and yoga in our world, and at least try to start creating some conversations about many things.
Because actually, for people that have been listening for a while, they know, and you probably don't know that I have got severe hip dysplasia in my left side, my left pelvis, left hip. But I was born with it and nobody knew about it until I started running 16 years ago. And then it kind of started grating. And then I started yoga and for 15 years, it has been amazing. But the past year, especially with pigeon pose, lunges, I can really feel it now. It's not working anymore.
I mean, there's a lot to unpack there, but I mean, definitely when you have physiological issues, you know, yoga will provide relief, you know, and I think we can all agree that if you're feeling some pain in your body, you feel pain in your back, if you whatever's going on, you kind of drop into child's pose and most of us, not everybody, but most of us feels better. Or if we like feel pain in our hips, we stretch it out and there is some temporary relief. But, you know, I also get temporary relief from drinking a bottle of wine, but it's not necessarily good for me. So, or it's a temporary band-aid to you know, what's really going on. And that's kind of what happened with me, Gemma. I started yoga when I was 18 and I was very active, very fit. And one of the things that kind of coincided at that moment was I really hurt my back. I didn't hurt it in yoga. Per se. When I say yoga, by the way, for your listeners, I'm just really talking about stretching. Okay. So I'm kind of equating yoga with stretching. So when I say yoga, sometimes it's synonymous with stretching in this context. Because when I started yoga, it really was to stretch. I was very active, I was very fit. but it was also tight. And I didn't understand the biomechanics of muscle tightness. So then obviously I went to yoga, stretching, AKA stretching, but I really hurt my back. And it took me 25 years to start connecting the dots of like my back going out. It was as a result of muscle weakness, and the muscle weakness was becoming exacerbated by stretching, by yoga, by stretching. And so it wasn't really until probably similar to a situation you're in now, maybe a little bit more dramatic, that I ended up in a surgeon's office saying to me, Yogi Aaron, you're going to need to have spinal fusion in your lower back. Probably to this date, I still haven't had it. So I've managed for the last 5 years or so to escape the surgeon's knife. But I quickly learned that stretching was debilitating muscle function. And what we needed to do was start activating muscles. And that kind of journey kind of led me to muscle activation technique, which is a type of, for lack of better words right now, just for simplicity, it's a type of manual massage to activate muscles.
Okay.
And test them. So it's not just like, okay, I think I'm activating them. We actually go in and test them before and after. And as I was doing that and I was studying it, a couple of things started kind of like lights going off. One of them was how much I did not know about anatomy that I thought I knew about anatomy. I realized I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
I also realized the yoga world doesn't know anything either, but that's another conversation. I was just very humbled. And then the second thing was I tried to bring this approach, this muscle activation technique approach, into the yoga world. And because there was nobody in that world doing it in yoga.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes you just have to be a trailblazer in life. So that's kind of like where that's kind of like the short story of how I got into them.
Yeah. That's amazing. And actually I find that as well with other yoga teachers, because I used to be a veterinary nurse, or over there it would be veterinary technician. So I do know all of like the different parts of the body, the anatomy, but a lot of people don't, even though you get taught it as a yoga teacher, it's only like one part of the course. It's not anything really that you should know, but you really do need to know it, I think, especially for injured people or with what you're doing as well. It sounds amazing.
Well, I think it's a big conversation to have, like what kind of anatomy, like, you know, a lot of the anatomy that's taught is done in two different ways, typically speaking in yoga trainings. One format is to have students draw in or color in, you know, anatomy charts. And that doesn't do anything. I mean, it's nice. It looks pretty. And then the second thing is you have an expert come in and kind of teach at the front of the room. And so I called my approach a YAMA. YAMA stands for Applied Yoga Anatomy and Muscle Activation. And the applied part was really, applied is synonymous with experiential. Like, it's no longer that I'm talking about the psoas and how amazing it is as a muscle, but now let's actually feel the psoas shorten. Let's actually feel the psoas contract. So let's get our fingers in there and then see it. Now, notice what happens when your psoas is weak. Notice what happens when your psoas is strong. Yeah. Notice how much stronger you are. Notice how your range of motion improves in forward flexion. And so starting to bring this kind of anatomy, or the glutes. I mean, the glutes are very obvious, but this is a weak glute. This is a strong glute. See the difference. Feel the difference in your body. And now you know where your glutes are, you know what the importance of them are. And that's kind of what I'm trying to bring to the table too, is it's not just preaching stop stretching, but like, let's actually have some fundamental experiential knowledge of the body. And you don't need a lot. Like people think, call me an expert a lot. I'm not an expert. I'm very much an expert in my, like, very narrow lane. Because if you start throwing out too many things, I might get lost in it too. So, but I know what I know. And I always say to my students now, like, again, very specific, that if you study the Sigyama approach, you will have more knowledge about muscle function. And please put that in brackets, like muscle or, you know, quotes or whatever, muscle function. Than most. Definitely more than yoga teachers, probably more than most fitness trainers, and I would even say more than some doctors, because doctors don't understand muscle function either. Very few people understand the biomechanics of muscle function. So
Oh, that's amazing. And going back to stretching, how does that harm the body then? Like, are you overstretching in a yoga pose, or well, anything then?
I wouldn't say, I don't use the word overstretching anymore. I just say stretching, any kind of stretching. So when I started muscle activation technique, one of the things that happened to me very quickly was after I ended up in the surgeon's office, I went and spent some time with a colleague, friend, who does muscle activation technique. I spent 8 days with him. And over those 8 days, he started giving me kind of the pre-introduction to my body. And I had worked with him before, it wasn't just a hap thing, but he kind of had elevated his knowledge at that point. So he kind of took me on this journey of my body for 8 days. But one of the things that he did, and it was actually around the psoas, he got my psoas strong, and then he passively stretched it.
Oh, wow.
And it was actually a movement that happens almost in most yoga classes. What happens is, you know, when someone's lying in Shavasana and you as a teacher come up, and sometimes I don't know if you've done this or had this to you happen, but a teacher comes up or you pick up your student's legs at the feet and just kind of move them around. He did that exact same movement. So when I say passive stretch, it was very passive. But he came back and tested my psoas, and it was weak.
Oh, wow.
And it was like noticeably weak, like all the strength had left the building. And that was a wake up call for me, because I've never experienced anything so dramatic in my life. And that was at the moment when I said, I'm not teaching stretching anymore. So what happens, there's a few things that happens, but one of them is that your brain theoretically is connected to your muscles, your central nervous system is connected to your muscles. And that's called, in biomechanical terms, proprioception. So the muscle is talking to the brain or the central nervous system, and the central nervous system is talking to the muscles. And when I start to passively move a muscle, like for example, the psoas. So one example would be hugging knees to chest. So if my arms are out to the sides, I'm on my back, and I bring my knees to my chest, there's total accountability, because my hip flexors and my trunk flexors, aka my abs, are pulling the knees in. But now I bring my hands to my knees and I pull the knees hard closer for a nice juicy squeeze. And what happens is that bypasses the proprioception between the brain and the muscle. And the brain is no longer connected to those muscles. It's just kaput. Another way to think about it too is that you have in your muscles these little muscle spindles. And I don't know if you have these in the UK, but in America, we have these things called slinkies. You put the slinky and it comes down the stairs, and children love to play with them. And so you can imagine, like, you give your child a slinky, and then they turn to their friend and they say, grab the other end, go as far away as you can. And that's what we're doing in yoga. We're trying to get as elongated as far as we can. And then you let go. Well, that slinky doesn't recoil back to its natural state. And so these muscle spindles in our muscles are like that. They're coiled up. Their natural state, the best state that they can be in, is to be in a coiled state,
Yeah.
And then when we stretch, we're starting to elongate them. And depending on how old we are, how much stress we've had in our life, they can take a long time to recoil. And we see this a lot, like with ballerinas, with gymnasts, that, you know, they increase the range of motion through stretching. But then, you know, a few years later, they end up with all of these ACE bandages. You know, this woman that I just responded to on Facebook, she needs hip replacement. People are going in for spinal fusions because their muscles are not coiling properly anymore. And it's really got to do with this, again, it's not necessarily the muscle per se, it's the neuromuscular connection between the brain and the muscle. And that's what we want to fortify. We want to fortify that communication center.
That's incredible. Now we are going to go to a short break. See you the other side. Hey, hey, I just wanted to share with you that I am now an ambassador for Toby Gifts, and they are an incredible company who do coconut bowls, upcycled rice bags, recycled plastic notebooks in the form of elephant dung paper, yes, you heard that right, coconut spoons and bamboo straws. And Toby Gifts is an incredible company owned by English entrepreneur Hannah Hodson, and she wanted to build an ethical, fair trade and socially responsible business selling coconut and smoothie bowls to the UK. And it was founded with a triple bottom line philosophy where people and planet are just as important as profit. The team established partnerships with many different groups in Sri Lanka to build a brighter future for their local communities. And it is such a lovely company to work for. They're fair trade, they have the ability to directly change lives, as well as our ever-present sense of evolving environmental changes help us to keep focus on making a world a better place. So you can get a discount with tovygifts.com. Go to tovygifts.com and in the checkout put YogiGemma10 for a 10% discount, and go ahead and find out more about them because they are an incredible company and I absolutely love them. The coconut bowls are so beautiful. The children really love them. They also love the straws as well. It's just, oh, I just love it so, so much. And actually, I'm using the notebooks for all of my clients as well. So yes, go and have a look. It's tovygifts.com and use YogiGemma10 at the checkout for your wonderful discount. So also with the breathing then as well, with the oxygen, is that oxygen not getting, yes, it's getting to the muscles, but it's not actually getting towards those coil parts because they don't need it.
The breath.
Yeah. Like when you take in a big deep breath and you exhale, but you've got this new oxygen in your body, which then goes to all the muscle fibers, giving it the fresh oxygen, giving it fresh blood supply to that muscle. I suppose it's not actually the muscle itself, those coils, really, is it? It's the muscle fibers that it's getting to. So I suppose it doesn't really
I wouldn't say that just doing deep breathing, because I'm a deep breather. I am very much into pranayama.
Yeah.
But that doesn't really help with muscle function. And a lot of this is being done at an unconscious state. And so in yoga, one of the things that we constantly say is like we're building that mind-body connection, which kind of denotes this idea that we're working at a conscious level. But I always say that muscle activation works at an unconscious level. It works with connecting literally the brain to the body. Yeah. And so the brain has forgotten that you have certain muscles. Take runners. Runners are a good example, because one of the things that runners often kind of jab at each other about is their flat ass.
Yeah.
And, you know, the runner's butt. And so part of that is because their butts, their glutes weren't working, and then they just don't work. And so what the runner ends up doing is compensating in other muscle groups to be able to run. But I always say, just imagine how much more powerful you would be if you actually did get your glutes working properly. I was actually just trying to fact check this literally the other day about how much force output the glutes are responsible for in just walking, let alone running or hiking. But I imagine, it seems to me that must be a lot, like I would say 50 to 70%. So if we can agree at least, you know, unfactually, of course, because I don't know unless you know, but if we can agree it's at least 50%, I think we can also both agree that's a lot of responsibility for movement. And if that 50% isn't working, we start to go into other muscles that shouldn't be doing the job. And that's why we end up seeing, especially hikers and runners, ending up with severe hip pain, lower back pain, and especially knee pain. And I suffered from all three of those. And I had to hang up my hiking shoes at the age of 30 because I just was so debilitated.
Yeah, that's awful. But also, I suppose people, if you go to the doctor or, I don't know, another health professional or someone like that, they will say if you are a runner, they will say, make sure you stretch afterwards, make sure you do yoga, make sure you do Pilates, yes, whatever. So what would that kind of be then? Would you say yes, but no?
I would say that the doctor is just saying that because everybody else is saying that. Mm. And usually they'll frame it, not usually, although I could be wrong, but usually they frame it in more like, I've heard that yoga is good. You might want to try it. I've heard that stretching might be good. So they're just saying it because everybody is saying it. And again, it comes back to that idea of muscle function. When you and I were in school, in grade school, if you can remember back that far, but we both learned, even before you did nursing, we both learned a fundamental rule of muscle function, which was this idea of opposites. And so as a muscle is contracting, the opposite muscle has to relax. So there's this antagonist-agonist relationship between muscles. And and so if that opposite muscle, aka, like, let's talk about the hamstrings. Hamstrings are tight in most people, and that tightness is showing up as a sign of muscle weakness. What is weak is the quads. The quads are not, and when I'm talking about weak, let's be very clear, I'm talking about that brain to muscle connection. Like the brain sends out a message to the quads, like contract, but it can't find the quads. It doesn't know where the quads are in space, literally. And so there's this relationship between the brain and the quads isn't there. So the brain then senses instability. It can't find the quad. So it's going to find any other muscle it can. Well, the closest muscle is going to be the hamstrings. So this is tighten up, tighten up, tighten up. Tight muscle tightness is always a sign of muscle instability. So what we want to do is create more stability. And guess what? Tightness disappears like that.
That is incredible, actually. And I think the doctors have said to me, because I'm going on Monday for another checkup, because they wanted me to have a double hip replacement. And I was like, no way, I'm going to try everything else. But, and that was 9 months ago. But he was saying that where I've got cysts in between my ball and socket joint. So originally, about 5 years ago, I tore the meniscus in my knee. And then this is when they found out about the hip. But yeah, so I was running and I was supposed to be doing a 10 mile mud run thing. And it was 2 days before, but I knew that I shouldn't run on pavement or the road, but I did. So I tore it. And then they're saying that I needed to work on my quads, my hamstrings, and my calf, because they are the muscles that are going to support it. And I'm thinking, okay, but how? It's not, is it? It's going to be what you've just said, really. Working it like that.
I mean, there's I've got a few practices I can message you after the show that will definitely help you. But you know, the fact that you tore your meniscus, you know, you had this problem, you started doing yoga, you felt better, but then you became more disabled because you were in a weakened state, and then you became more weaker, and then these injuries popped up. And I just want to respond to something you said, because it was invaluable. You said you shouldn't have run on pavement. And it's not that running on pavement's bad. It's because the body is weak. It's in a weakened state. So muscles have two functions. I mean, they have more functions, but for the purposes of this conversation, they have two functions. They contract, muscles need to contract. They need to shorten to do two things. They shorten to move bones and to stabilize joints. And so you're doing all of these hip openers, you know, which feel good, like pigeon pose. But then, you know, it's like you've lengthened these muscles, so they're no longer shortening to hold and stabilize the hip joints. And I always say that the hips, the hip flexors and extensors are like the shock absorbers of the body. Yeah. So when you say you can't run on pavement, what I hear, what filters in the Ayama brain of mine is, we need to get those hip flexors and hip extensors engaging properly, those shock absorbers, and then your knees won't suffer so much.
My knee did heal itself, which was good after about.
Oh, that's
but
great.
Yeah, then it makes my pelvis worse. So yeah, it is really, it's funny actually how everything is connected. And also I think they looked at my feet as well, because originally when I was born and started to walk, I had inward turning feet. Like if I put my feet together, I've got bowed legs because of the inward rotation of my pelvis. It's really weird. Mm. Yeah.
So wow.
I'm just a bit weird.
We're all a little bit bent. Don't worry.
And what is the ultimate goal of yoga? And like, how does the Ayama support this? Because I suppose it's different to a normal yoga practice.
Yeah, I've had a few teachers ask me about that. Like, how do you sequence these muscle activations in the whole class, muscle activations? And the answer is kind of twofold. One, in a normal class, like say if I was teaching an hour and 15 minute class, I probably would try to throw in about four specific muscle activation practices, but like it would just seamlessly fit in. So let me give you two examples. One is bridge pose. So we both do bridge. So you just kind of, you just flip it a little bit or refine it. So that way we're making it more about glutes.
Yeah.
And then another one of my favorites is Shalabhasana, which is Superman pose.
I love that one.
So again, you just take those two poses. So a lot of the muscle activations are just typical poses. Some of them are not. But we just weave them in. And then the second thing that we do is we flip the script on the way that we teach a pose. So for example, with triangle pose, which I love, triangle is one of my favorites.
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
Instead of like just kind of dumping into the hips and, you know, dropping down to the ground, I always cue it differently. I say cross the arms. Now the side that you're bending into, so if I'm bending into my right side, I want you to take your right shoulder to your right hip bone. So you're squeezing the lateral obliques on the side that you're bending into. I do not talk about feel the stretch on the left side, feel your heart opening up. No, it's all about let's get these lateral obliques shortening properly and the QL shortening properly. And then all of, and you know, we can build in a little muscle activation practice with that, which is coming into an isometric contraction for 6 seconds and holding it or doing it 6 times. And all of a sudden, now you've not only increased range of motion, AKA your lateral obliques can contract properly, but you're now coming into a range of motion with stability. Your body is supported because the muscles are actually working properly. If you say to people like, you know, if you, a typical way that teachers cue triangle pose is like stick your left hip out, we're going to come into the right side. Now reach with the right arm and then drop the right arm down to the floor. If you ask most people like, okay, I want you to lift up about 6 inches off the floor, they couldn't do it because there's no muscle strength. The muscles are not engaging. You bypass all of these muscles that should be supporting you in this pose and none of them are working. And if you do ask, if students are able to do it, usually they'll feel pain in their knees or their lower back, because these other little muscles are starting to compensate to try and move the body where you want it to go.
That's amazing. That's so true. And actually, I do that with banana pose. So trying to squeeze, or I say squeeze inner hips towards inner ribs, because then you're actually activating that side.
You're actually, there's the little, while you brought that up, that is a fantastic thing to do. And here's a little experiment. Get people to do triangle pose with their arms crossed first.
Yes, I'm going to do that tonight.
Don't do it. But then go do banana pose and work on driving on the inside, of course, on driving the lower hip, the hip bone, the greater trochanter to the floating ribs. What muscle are you engaging there? QL. And you know how small QL is.
Yeah.
But it's such an important side bender. And your range of motion, I've seen some people's range of motion in triangle pick up 6 to 12 inches.
Wow.
Like a good foot sometimes. Yes.
That's amazing.
It's just from activating the QL. And QL, I'm actually starting to discover through some of my own work, is so responsible for TFL pain, tensor fasciae latae pain, and also a lot of hip pain. And so the glute med and the TFL sometimes get overstressed because the QL isn't working properly, the QL and psoas. So just a little offering to you.
That is good, definitely. And tell me about your book. What's your book about?
So first of all your listeners should go to Amazon and get Stop Stretching. So you just have to go
to
Amazon.
Put the link down below. It's fine.
Stop Stretching. And yeah, we'll have the link in the show notes. But the book is just kind of going through my own journey of my own pain journey. And then it kind of goes into the solution. One of them is Stop Stretching. So there's a lot of science in the book. I think one of the conversations that you and I had before was just how lacking a lot of people are in just functional anatomy. And so my goal in this book is, in a fun way and interactive way, because it's very interactive, to begin to share with people a little bit about how their body's working. We hear these words like side bender. Some of your listeners are probably going, what the buggery bollocks is he talking about? but we go through the 7 different movements, basic movements of the body, and then talk about what muscles are responsible for those movements and then how to activate those muscles. And so there's a lot in there for yoga teachers to really kind of up-level their teaching.
Yeah.
But more importantly, their personal practice and also really tools on how to teach yoga safely, like what poses you shouldn't do. And if you are going to do certain poses, what things you should consider. Like, for example, backbending, we look at wheel pose. And so it's traditionally taught like opening the thighs, opening the heart, which is not the right thing to do. You should be getting the back body engaging. And so we talk about that. And so that way you can start to cue your classes more safely, but also more importantly, that you become more stronger in your own body.
Oh, that's amazing. Yes. And what are 2 takeaway points from today's conversation? Now I'm putting you on the spot.
stop stretching, start activating. That's my go-to answer. And go to Amazon and get the book. as a takeaway though, I just mentioned those 2 poses before, bridge pose, shalabhasana. They are game changers. If you start to add them into your life and do them every single day religiously, you will not only start to get stronger, but you'll actually start to turn back the clock of aging. And I don't mean that like you'll look younger, but you will start to actually, muscles will start to work and you'll be more supported. If we look at like how older people walk through life, most generally speaking, they're hunched.
Yeah.
These practices start to pull the spine back up into an erect position. So it's just invaluable.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you. And where can we find you? What's your website or your social media channels?
You just search, go to yogiaron.com, yogi, and then Aaron, A-A-R-O-N. .com, and it's sort of a gateway or portal into my YouTube practices, my online forum, the Yogi Club, and also the book and the podcast Stop Stretching as well.
Oh, perfect. Thank you so much for coming on. It's been really fun.
You're very welcome, Gemma. Thank you, and happy practicing.
Thank you, too. Oh, so as always, I would love to hear your thoughts about this episode. So please leave a comment or tag me on social media using @YogiGemma. I'm always so grateful to hear your thoughts. And thank you, thank you, thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening to this episode. I will be back next week with another one, another fun episode for you guys to listen to. And also please leave a review on iTunes or like and subscribe to this podcast, because it really means the world to me. So thank you, thank you, thank you so much, and I will see you very soon.